Okay.
This is a play.
All right.
Play to play.
How are the Ravens doing?
Okay. So, last week we started talking about the reconstitution of the Sanhedrin, of rabbinic authority in Yavne after the Churban Bayit Sheni. The story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, we didn't get into the story because the focus here is history of halacha. The focus isn't so much the history of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The three takanot, we saw a series of takanot that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made when they came to Yavne. So on one hand, some of those takanot, the clear focus is Mehirai Baneh HaMikdash, right? We're looking forward to a day that the Beit HaMikdash is going to be back. We're not trying to replace the Beit HaMikdash. When the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, that will reclaim its pride of place in, you know, at the center of Jewish communal organization. But at the same time, you have a shift of, at least a temporary shift of focus, to Yavne. That things that originally were only done in the Mikdash, like blowing the shofar on Shabbos, like Kiddush HaChodesh, that's the main one, those were now done at Yavne, specifically at Yavne, or specifically wherever the Beis Din HaGadol was.
A little tougher there, right?
What do you mean?
Isn't there any elevation to send the smoke signals?
Oh, the smoke signals. The smoke signals were gone by then. The smoke signals were only used temporarily. The smoke signals weren't used anymore at that point. By the time they got to Yavne.
Later on, didn't a riff expand the thing from, let's say, Yavne or the one location, Sanhedrin, to anywhere where there was a...
It's a machloket in the Mishnah.
No, but I know, but I guess what I'm saying is I think they riff blew shofar in his Shulman Shabbos in Fez.
That's fascinating. That is fascinating. I would like to see that. I could see maybe the Gaonic Academies would do that. But Fez, that's a real chiddush.
Okay, I'll try to find that for you.
Okay, great. I would love to see that. I know that there was a long machloket as to how many days of Rosh Hashanah you keep in Eretz Yisrael. That lasted until the 1200s.
12th century, right.
Yeah.
That's mentioned in Tkufat HaGaonim, the Sifrut HaAsaf's book.
Right, but it even comes up in, I think the Baal HaMa'or even talks about it. Uh-huh. Even later. My hometown, Baal HaMa'or.
Right.
Sorry. Okay. And we talked about the story of Rabban Gamliel. Right now, when it comes to calendars, calendar is one of those places that's a site of real power. If you think about the calendar that we use today, not the Jewish calendar, what's it called? What's the name of that calendar?
Gregorian.
Why is it called the Gregorian?
Pope Gregory.
What did Pope Gregory do?
He changed 11 days, didn't he?
Right. He erased 11 days.
Yeah.
He declared that in all realms where the word of the Pope is authoritative, we're all going to go to sleep on October 5th and wake up on October 16th, something like that. You have to have real power to do that. If I tweet that, it's not going to happen. Let's skip January 15th this year. It's not going to happen. You have to have real power in order to... A calendar is one of those things that it has to be uniform. If it's not uniform, you're talking about societies that are not cohesive.
That was not followed in Russia, Orthodox Church?
Correct. There still are places, right, so they just celebrated Christmas last week. And there's a whole machlokes about the people that don't learn on Nitelnacht. Which Nitelnacht do you not learn on? Do you not learn on December 25th? Do you not learn on the Julian December 25th, which is now January 7th or something like that? The Julian calendar also. It was Julius Caesar decided, okay, this is the new calendar.
Guess what?
We're naming a month after me.
Not for liturgical reasons, but I mean, they really, like now Russia says the same date as everyone else.
Russia, the country, but
yes.
You still have a liturgical calendar.
But in the early 19th century, they didn't. And there was a
Guess what? The Jewish calendar is still on the Julian system, not on the Gregorian system.
How's that?
If you look in the Rishonim, and this speaks directly to the point that I'm talking about here. If you look in the Rishonim, late Rishonim, it's Avudraham, and you look in the halachos of Tfila, of Shmona Esrei, it will say that in Chutz La'aretz, we start saying Saint Halu Matar Lufracha on November 22nd, or something like that.
Not December 5th.
And the shift is the Gregorian shift, that everybody else skipped 10 days, but we're still on that calendar. So it's not that we moved it from November 22nd to December 5th. It's that we're still on the Gregorian calendar. And according to the Gregorian calendar, December 5th is November 22nd or something like that by now. But the point is that we don't have any central authority to declare, oh, we're now going to do it this way. If our calendar gets out of whack, and our calendar is slightly out of whack, at some point in something like 10,000 years in Chutz La'aretz, they just won't be saying V'sein Talu Matar Levracha anymore. Meaning it'll just keep on getting going forward one day and one day and one day until it's already Pesach. It is slightly out of whack, and there's other ways that it's slightly out of whack, that when they set it up, there were these cumulative rounding errors that over time really
add up. Which nobody expected it to last that long.
Nobody expected it to last that long. But the point is that we don't have any centralized authority anymore. If we're going to change it, who's going to change it? Well, the Rabbanut? They're a centralized authority? I mean, they are a centralized authority. No, sorry. They're a centralized power. They're not a centralized authority. In order to, you know, for Rabbi Gamliel to do what he did here, and the mission in Rosh Hashanah, it explains that Rabbi Gamliel accepted Edim who could not possibly have seen the new moon. It was an astronomical impossibility. They saw the waxing, they saw the waning crescent in the morning, and then that evening they saw the waxing crescent. When it comes to Kiddush HaChodesh, there's about 20 minutes at dusk where you can see the new moon. Have you ever seen it? It's very difficult to see. It's a tiny, tiny sliver.
And it's very near the sun.
Correct, meaning it's very near the sun, which means that the only time you can see it is right after the sun sets. Right? You'll have about 15 minutes where you can see it going down. Very difficult to see. You have to know where to look. It's not simple at all. You will not notice it unless you're looking for it. And this is an impossibility to see. There's more than 12 hours that the moon is invisible. So I mean, it's too close to the sun. It would be too close to the sun in the sky to be visible at all. So Rabban Gamliel accepted these witnesses that were that had seen it in the morning and then again that evening. And Rabbi Dosa ben Horkina says, Edei sheker hein. They can't possibly be telling the truth. It's like saying, oh yeah, we testify that this woman gave birth, and the next day her belly is between her teeth again, meaning she's still pregnant. Rabbi Yoshua says, yeah, you're right. This can't be. And Rabbi Gamliel says to him, I decree on you I decree that you have to show up in front of me with your staff and with your money on the day that you deem to be Yom Kippur. The day that you consider to be Yom Kippur, I decree that you have to appear before me. And so now we're introduced to a very important character in the history of Torah Sheba'al Peh, the history of Halacha, and that's Rabbi Akiva. So Rabban Gamliel, he doesn't give a drasha. He just pure power play. I decree upon you. I'm imposing my day of Yom Kippur onto you. Meaning he's saying to him that when it comes to calendar, it's not okay that, okay, like you do your way, I do my way. That's fine. Well, whatever, pluralism, right? One person keeps Yom Kippur this day, one person keeps Yom Kippur that day. That can't be. If you have two different calendar systems, one's keeping a lunar calendar, one's keeping a solar calendar, one keeps Shabbos on this day and one keeps Shabbos on that day, it can't function. So Rabban Gamliel says, I'm gozer on you. I have power. You may be a bigger Talmud Chacham, you may be smarter than me, you may be right. It doesn't matter. I'm imposing this on you. Rabbi Akiva now comes along and he darshans it. He darshans support for Rabban Gamliel. Now, there are two different kinds of drushos that they like to talk about. And they say that one is more characteristic of Rabbi Akiva and the other one is more characteristic of Rabbi Ishmael, who were like the two main schools in the generation after the generation of Yavne. That one is more what they call Midrash Yotzer, which is creative drasha, or exegesis. And the other one is called Midrash Mekayim, right, where you use the drasha in order to reinforce existing practice, or eisegesis, right? It sounds like it's something like some kind of expletive, like you stub your toe and you're like, eisegesis. So what does Rabbi Akiva say here? Rabbi Akiva says, You have to go according to Rabban Gamliel. You have to do what Rabban Gamliel says. Why? Because there's a pasuk. He darshens it from a pasuk. The pasuk says, "Ele moadei Hashem mikra'ei kodesh asher tikru'u otam." But the word otam is written chaser. I'm sorry. That's the Gemara's drasha. Asher tikru'u atem. Atem afilu shogegim. Atem afilu mezidim, atem afilu mutayim. But that's not what Rabbi Akiva says. Shartikru otam. He's darshaning much more, something that's much more closer to pshat. He's not saying, oh, it's written otam, and it looks like atem. He says, asher tikru otam. You call them. You name them. They're mikra'i kodesh, asher tikru otam. They become kodesh because you call them kodesh. Bein bizmanon, bein shelo bizmanon. Whether it's the correct time for them or not. When the Beis Din declares, today is Yom Kippur, that day is Yom Kippur. So Rabban Gamliel is exercising power. Rabbi Akiva is looking in the Chumash to understand what's the basis for this power. I'm anchoring Rabban Gamliel's power in the Chumash. Now Rabbi Akiva knew full well that as a matter of fact, Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus were right. But it's not about who's right. It's about who has the power. And Rabbi Gamliel has the power. And so Rabbi Yehoshua did it. He showed up. Right. If you look at the last three lines, Natal Maklo Biyado, he took his walking stick and he took his money, Palachli Yavne, and he went to Yavne to Rabban Gamliel, Biyom Shechol Yom Kippurim Liot Becheshbono, on the day that according to his cheshbon is Yom Kippur. Rabban Gamliel Unishako Al Rosho. Rabban Gamliel stood up and kissed him on his head. Amarlo Bo B'Shalom. Come in peace, Rabbi Vitalmidai. You are my master and you are my student. Rabbi B'chokhma, you're my master because you're smarter than me. Vitalmidai, but you're also my disciple because you accepted my words.
if the Sanhedrin had made that kind of factual mistake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you get into the area of like Helen Dobbershot Seymour.
Correct.
And
that's
you
correct.
You also get into the situation that, for example, if one of the members knows that it's a mistake and follows it anyway, that he's over and has to bring a chatos.
Okay. So hang on. So what's the answer, Ron? What's the answer?
It's not a mistake.
You can already answer this question. Based on what we already read, what's the answer? Why is there no par helen davar shalat tzibor?
It's not a Sanhedrin.
It's not
no,
a mistake.
It's a Sanhedrin.
They have the kof to decide when it is.
Because of Rabbi Akiva's drasha. Asher tikru otam b'moadam.
That's why we can have, you can do Kiddush Levana on Chol HaMoed Sukkos. It happens fairly often.
Really?
Yeah, because they move Rosh Hashanah, so right, it should be Adu Rosh, and it comes out that the molid for Tishrei is late enough that on the first day of Chol HaMoed you can still do Kiddush Levana. Here, not in America.
I guess what I'm saying is at the time, Rabbi Yehoshua.
Yeah.
Because this is before Rabbi Akiva's drasha, right?
No, Rabbi Akiva's drasha, it's all part of the conversation.
Okay.
In fact, Yehoshua asked Rabbi Akiva what he should do.
It's part of the discussion. Rabbi Yehoshua was Rabbi Akiva's Rebbe.
Okay. As well as Rabbi Yehoshua's Horkas.
Correct. Okay. Another story. The same group of people. This is a Mishnah in Yadayim. So, Bo Bayom, on that day.
That's the famous
on what
day?
Day? What was the day that they're talking about here? So, the day that they're talking about here is the day that Rabbi Gamliel was deposed. Rabbi Gamliel was deposed because of this power play. They found that he was too stark, that he was too
rough. This specific thing with Rabbi Yehoshua, or this and many
this specific thing with Rabbi Yehoshua.
This was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yes.
And who's they?
The rest of the Chachamim. They deposed him.
He was elected.
And then they brought in Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and then Rabbi Gamliel repented.
Like, where they had three chief rabbis.
Yeah, when I was at Karen Biavne in the early 90s,
yes.
In our Purim Spiel one year, Rav Goldwecht, who had been the Rosh Yeshiva, was deposed. And in our Purim Spiel, KBY won the Shtick Award this year because, you know, for dumping the Rosh Yeshiva. You know, the Shtick Award goes back 2,000 years when Karen Biavno won the first ever Shtick Award for deposing the Rosh Yeshiva.
Big mistake.
No. So, also on that day, once Rabbi Gamliel was out, they opened the place up. They put in a lot of benches. We talked.
Rabbi Gamliel was Tocho Kabaru. He wouldn't let you in unless you were.
So we talked about the Mishnah in Ediot, that a lot of the Mishnah in Ediot were recited on that day because people would just came and they would people came to Yavne and they stated traditions that they knew, and there was this sense that we need to anything that anybody knows, anything that anybody remembers, anything that anybody saw, we want to record it, and that in a sense is the beginning of the Mishnah. That Ediot, in a sense, is the first. It's a corpus of we're trying to collect the information from a period that's being lost. So there's a Mishnah in Yadayim that talks about what happened on that day. Bo Bayom, Ba Yehuda Ger Amoni. Yehuda, a Ger Amoni, came in front of the Sanhedrin. Ve'amad lifneihem beBeit HaMidrash. And he stood in front of them in the Beit Midrash, in Yavne. Amar lehem, ma'ani lavola kahal. Am I allowed to enter the community? Meaning, am I allowed to marry a Jewish woman? There's a pasuk in the Chumash. Lo yavo amoni u'moavi b'kahal Hashem. An amoni and a moavi are not allowed to marry into the Jewish community. Amar lo Rabban Gamliel, asurata. Rabban Gamliel says, it's asur. Amar lo Rabbi Yeshua, mutarata. It's mutar. Amar lo Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel says to Rabbi Yeshua, Katuv omer lo yavo amoni bekahal Hashem, gam dor asiri. It's like you're going against A pasuk in Chumash. How can you go against a pasuk in Chumash? So, Rabbi Yoshua says, and here again we see the beginnings of a. I wouldn't call it like it's not like a creativity in the sense of I'm just looking for the. It's just no. We're trying to think it through, and when you think it through, you come to different conclusions, right? The simple thing to do is to say, you're an Ammoni. The Torah says, lo yavo Ammoni. Finished. There's nothing else to talk about. Rabbi Yoshua says, wait a second. Are the Ammonim and Moavim, are they still in their place? Kar Allah Sancheriv Melech Hashor bil belet kol ha'umot. Sancheriv came and he mixed up all of the nations. Right? And this was part of, by the way, this was part of the Assyrian
conquer method.
Yeah, this was part of their policy. They would do population transfers. They did it here also.
The Shomronim,
right? They were called in rabbinic parlance. They're called the
Kutim.
Why?
Because they're from Kut.
Where's Kut?
Is it in Africa?
No, it's more like Afghanistan. It's somewhere in Central Asia, somewhere like northern Iran. The Caucasus.
We get it.
Yeah, one of the stands.
Don't say it, the joke.
Kutistan. That's where it is. And what they would do is they would take a population from there and bring them here. And they would take the populations from here and bring them elsewhere.
Okay.
To the other side of the Sambatyon, wherever that is. And what would happen is that they would end up with these mixtures and these hybrids and these syncretists and. It was a way of maintaining control. All the different empires had different ways of maintaining control. So this was the way that the Assyrians, Sancheriv being one of them, would maintain control over his empire. So Rabbi Yoshua says, Sancheriv came and he mixed everybody up. Shine emar ve'asir gvulot amim va'atudote hen shoseti. Va'ored ka'abir yoshvim. Amar relo Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel says, but the pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, va'acharechein ashivet shvut b'nei Amon. I'm going to return the people of Amon to their place. U'kvar chazru. And they came back. So this guy is an Ammoni. Mar lo Rabbi Yoshua, katuv omer v'shavti et shvut ami Yisrael v'Yehuda. Adayin lo shavu. Hitiruhu lavo bakahal. So this is...
Or in general, they.
Meaning the collective they. And the Gemara in Brachot actually learns from this that the greatness of Rabban Gamliel. What made Rabban Gamliel so great in this Mishnah?
He conceded.
Not just that he conceded. He showed up. He was no longer Rosh Yeshiva. Bo Bayom means he's no longer Rosh Yeshiva. This is day one of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's tenure as the head of the yeshiva at Yavne. And Rabbi Gamliel nevertheless was like, you know what? Still got to go. Still got to learn. Still got to participate in the destruction, even if I'm just one of the guys on the bench. And the Gemara actually praises him for that. A little zoom out.
Yeah, I guess about, let's say previous to that, he was the Nasi, is that?
Correct.
Okay, so he held one way, if all the other rabbis disagreed with him, the halakha would go like the rabbis, even when he was in control.
That's correct.
Okay.
But we talked about specifically the calendar, that doesn't apply.
What do you mean?
Because with the calendar, it's a... It doesn't. It's not a question of who's right. If
by
the Bezdin,
you go right by what the Nasi said, even if it,
yeah, yeah. If the Nasi declares it, then it's too late. Once it's been declared, that's it. And Rabbi Akiva darshan the pasuk.
Thing of because we need to get the news out, we go by presidential order.
I think it's not because you need to get the news out. I think it's because you can't have.
Can you
multivalent calendars.
You need to you needed a Beit Din.
You needed the Beit Din.
Hear the Eidos.
The Beit Din.
The Beit Din.
The Beit Din. So when that Beit Din heard the evidence of the witnesses, they would vote on it, or they wouldn't even vote? Just say,
they accept the witnesses.
It's not a question of... See, it's a strange thing. It was very ceremonial. It wasn't... They would ask questions, but the sense that you get... the first mission in Sanhedrin, the first parak of Sanhedrin, it talks about how many judges you need for every kind of case. And Kiddush HaChodesh is a weird one. It says, B'shlosha matchilin, u'v'chamisha notnin v'notnin, v'gomrim v'shiva. Right? And it's somehow connected to Birkat Kohanim, right? 3, 5, 7. The sense that you get is that it's very ceremonial. Right? That it's not, we don't interrogate the witnesses too sharply, right? Too harshly. Did you really see it? What was your other guy wearing? What was the weather like? Yeah. Did you see the moon? Yes. Did it look like this? Yes. Great. Kiddush, Mekiddush. Great.
And they calculated it to accept the witnesses that came up with the right answers.
Yeah.
They knew what was going to be Rosh Chodesh before the witnesses showed up.
Sometimes they would do that. And Rabbi Akiva has this drasha of Asher Tikru Uotam B'Moadam, that your Koreh, that what you declare to be the Moadim, those are the Moadim. And the truth of the matter is that that's something even the Gemara expands on this, and it made it into our liturgy, right? We say Mekadesh Yisrael v'Hazmanim, Mekadesh Yisrael v'Roshei Chodoshim. Melech HaKol HaAretz Mekadesh Yisrael v'Yom HaZikaron. On Shabbat, we don't say Mekadesh Yisrael v'HaShabbat. But all other Yomim Tovim, we say Mekadesh Yisrael v'Hazmanim.
I don't understand why it would be an exception to the rule of not passing according to the majority.
You might paskin according to the majority, but once it's already been declared, it's been declared.
Oh, okay. So the Nasi didn't have any special power here.
He may have had special power. Theoretically, if the Nasi doesn't do it, if another Bezdin does it, it could be declared. Mm-hmm. But this is the kind of thing that...
It's part of the ceremonial nature of his role or something.
Correct. And we're trying to, in the generation after the Churban, you're trying to establish Yavne as the new seat of the Sanhedrin. Yavne as the replacement of Yerushalayim.
So they got to do all the big official...
So there's a very strong push to... And they want the people, they want the Hamonam to see the Sanhedrin, to see Yavne as the seat of the Sanhedrin as well.
Which is why it's even more important that the Gamaliel... This is Rabbi Gamliel's court, and as soon as he sets up court somewhere else, that would totally ruin the idea of establishing Yavne as the seat of the Sanhedrin.
It's why Rabbi Yehoshua needs to concede.
Rabbi Yehoshua needs to. I thought you said where they praise Rabbi Gamliel for.
Rabbi Gamliel, after this, Rabbi Gamliel was deposed.
Right. And after he was deposed, he was still part of the conversation. So I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You're trying to establish this place as the seat of Sanhedrin.
The fact that he shows up there and doesn't split off and go somewhere else, yes, that is important. Good point. Okay. A little bit of a zoom out.
Here would be the rabbi. So Rav Sobel's shiur begins first parak of Sanhedrin on Wednesday.
Okay.
I want to join the Siyum on Kretut on Tuesday to Rome at 8.
Karetot.
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 Yes. Kritut is Gittin.
The
Katavla Sefer Kritut. But this is the plural of Karet. So it's Karetot. Different word. Zoom out. Rabbi Gamliel. So right after the Churban, you have Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's tenure is not very long. He was a very old man when this whole thing starts. Rabbi Gamliel is the one who really establishes Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and then Rabbi Gamliel, they establish Yavne. Rabbi Gamliel was there for quite some time. He dies, his tenure lasts until approximately the year 100. Okay. The two major figures that are his colleagues, that are his contemporaries, students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, are Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkinus and Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Yehoshua, we already met. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Eliezer had more of a reputation of being a machmir and like a very difficult, harsh personality. Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Yehoshua is the one who's almost heroic. He was personally, there are stories in the Gemara about how he's very ugly, how he was very poor.
He was a
blacksmith. Yeah. And their student, primarily Rabbi Yehoshua's student, was Rabbi Akiva. Generation of Rabbi Akiva is also Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Ishmael. Rabbi Akiva's generation, as is known, toward the end of Rabbi Akiva's life, you had another rebellion against Rome. This is the Bar Kokhba revolt, which ends with the fall of Beitar. Rabbi Gamliel, most of Rabbi Akiva's students die. Whether in the revolt or not in the revolt is an open question. But he then goes and he has another group of Talmidim. And those Talmidim, the Gemara actually says very explicitly that they're the ones who restored the Torah to its former glory. That they're the ones who ensured that the Torah would continue. Right? If not for them, the Torah would have been forgotten. If not for these students, the Torah would have been forgotten. There are a lot of stories about this cadre of students. And each place, it's a slightly different list. But the list of students are
Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi,
Rabban Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. You have in the same generation Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who was either the son or the great-grandson of this Rabban Gamliel. Probably great-grandson. And the father of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. They're known as the generation of Usha.
Was there somebody ben Arach also?
Elazar ben Arach was the contemporary of Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five students.
Right.
The Gemara, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos talks about the five students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and it lists Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua amongst three others. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, they say, son of a Pirish, right? He learned, and then he went elsewhere to, like, he didn't stay within the circle of the sages. Right? There's a famous story in Hacheresh Hayalibam, that he was going to read Hachodesh HaZelachem, and he read Hacheresh Hayalibam, that he forgot how to read. He became an illiterate. That's how the story goes. Rabbi Akiva is, by the time you get to the Bavli, is seen as the hero of Torah Shebaal Peh, that he was the one who was Mechadesh Chidushim, and the idea of Chidush, right, that he was Doresh Detagin. Right, he would learn things from every little jot in the Chumash. The story of Moshe Rabbeinu showing up and sitting in the back of Rabbi Akiva's shir and not knowing what's going on because he just couldn't understand what was going on in Rabbi Akiva's shir. Right? It's a very jarring image because it's almost a denial of any sort of continuity. We don't see it as continuous anymore. And it specifically is with Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva, if you talk about the people who are Mechadesh, right, so we talk about, okay, Hillel was mitaken a Prusbel, and everybody loves Prusbel. Oh, yeah, we need to be Makil on this, that, and the other. Why? Oh, yeah, Hillel, Prusbel. It's almost like it's like the exhibit A in the, where there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. Hillel, Prusbel. Rabbi Akiva, and we saw it a little bit here, but Rabbi Akiva is the one, he takes a pasuk and he sees things in the pasuk that nobody had ever seen before. Elim o'ade asher Hashem asher tikru'u otam v'mo'adam. Rabbi Akiva is like, taka asher tikru'u otam means that if we call it, if we declare this to be a yontif, if we declare this to be kodesh, then it's kodesh.
Yes.
Rabbi Akiva, we know, met a demise, a tragic demise. And his students, meaning the fact that it was his students that sort of carried the torch further, meant that the Torah that we have today, it's almost like you have, Rabbi Akiva is almost like a drainage basin, right? That you have the Torah of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Yehoshua, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, all filtered down to Rabbi Akiva. And then from Rabbi Akiva, it expands out again, because there were other people in the generation of Rabbi Akiva, but we don't really know who were Rabbi Tarfon's students, who was Rabbi Yishmael's students. We know that Rabbi Yishmael had a yeshiva. We have all over Shas, Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael. It was taught in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yishmael. The one work that we have that's from the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yishmael is the Mechilta. The Mechilta is, there's two versions of the Mechilta. The Mechilta is a halachic medrash on Shmot. So you have the Medrash, you have the Mechilta to Rabbi Yishmael, and you have the Mechilta to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Right. From these two Batei Medrash, the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and you have the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yehoshua. But it was really the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Akiva that becomes the dominant method, the dominant Beis Medrash in the generation after him. And not because of his earlier Talmidim. What's that? Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael are contemporaries.
There's the Mechilta of
Rabbi Yishmael, and there's the Mechilta of Rashbi, of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is
a later generation,
a student of Rabbi Akiva. So that's where you have, but the Torah that we have, the Mishnah, is primarily the Torah of Rabbi Akiva. And it's the generation after Rabbi Akiva, you have this migration north. This generation is called the generation of Usha. Right? We saw last week that the Sanhedrin migrated. After Yavne, it went to Usha. According to the Bavli, it went back to Yavne and then went back to Usha. According to all of the Eretz Yisrael traditions, there was no back to Yavne. Only in Bavli that you have Yavne l'Usha, Usha l'Yavne, Yavne l'Usha. In the Yerushalmi and in all of the Midrashim there, it's just Yavne to Usha. Usha is where...
The Katsrin area?
No, it's in the Yokneam area.
All right, close enough.
They're all around there. Yeah. Beit Shearim, Tzipori, Usha, they're all in the same... Usha and Beit Shearim are very close to one another. We'll talk a little bit more about the generation of Usha next week, and we'll also start talking about Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi next week.